Joining us today is Mr. James Capretta, a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and a health policy consultant. Mr. Capretta was an associate director at the White House Office of Management and Budget from 2001 to 2004. Mr. Capretta is joining us today to talk about his recent article with his co-author, Tevi Troy, Wrong Big Picture, Dangerous Fine Print, But Otherwise Obamacare is Swell. Jim, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be with you.
Could you talk just for a few minutes about your piece and what do you see as the most problematic aspects of the legislation that's currently in discussion on Capitol Hill?
Well, the piece really sort of makes sort of two points, is that the bills that are moving in Congress are sort of structurally flawed for one major reason, which is that they essentially force Americans into government-approved insurance with the premiums rising at a pretty rapid rate, and it'll be costly for a lot of people. And that's really the sets the stage as the predicate for the government to become the arbiter of cost control, and instead of letting the market really allocate resources and drive efficiency, the government is going to make everybody buy insurance, and then it'll become the government's responsibility, of course, to make sure the premiums are affordable. And, you know, that's really the beginning of heading towards something like what other countries have done, which unfortunately leads to deterioration in quality, stifling innovation, queues and waiting lists and access problems. And so, on the big picture structural level, you know, it's clear that if we adopted the bills that they're currently working on, you know, we'd be headed down that road. It wouldn't happen all overnight, but it would happen pretty rapidly, and we'd end up with growing pressure as people are forced to buy health care that's been approved by the government. They'll turn around and ask the government, why are my premiums going up so fast? And then the government will, of course, step in and start doing all the kinds of things, price controls and capital budgeting and regulations on providers that will drive out supply and eventually lead to lower quality care. You know, that's sort of the big picture, what's wrong with, you know, the road they're headed down. But then you start reading the actual bills, and the apparatus they're putting in place has all kinds of details in it that really is also alarming. And, you know, it kind of highlights when the government gets so involved in financing and delivering health care for everybody in the country, it just brings in all of the aspects of government that, you know, can really be harmful to people. And that's what we tried to highlight in the piece. You know, we mentioned a number of different things. The first is that, you know, literally would outlaw the buying of private insurance kind of in America. Basically, there would be a grandfather provision, so existing private plans would be allowed to exist for a time, but they would sort of wither away because you can't maintain a risk pool if new entrants aren't allowed in. And so, you know, a private insurance company, otherwise qualified, just can't go out and sell its product to people anymore. They'd have to do it through sort of the auspices of government-approved mechanisms, federally approved mechanisms as part of this bill.
It seems like there are a couple of things that jump out at me, and tell me if they jump out at you too, is that there are two problems here, one of which is you're going to have lots of new regulations on private insurers, like community rating and guaranteed issue, that are going to drive up costs. And then you've got restrictions on the premiums that can be charged to customers. And then at the same time, you've got a public plan option that's going to be competing with private insurers that's going to have a tremendous advantage in the market. So if you're driving up prices for private insurers but limiting how much they can charge individuals and then offering a cheaper a public option, isn't that a recipe for a long-term bleed out of the private insurance industry?
Absolutely. The presence of the public plan as part of this becomes sort of the edge, you know, for heading toward a single-payer system. I mean, just as you described, in the dynamics they're setting up, there would be tremendous incentive for people to get out of employer-based plans and into the government-run option, and that would then become the dominant insurer in the under-65 market, just as it is in the Medicare market. And so pretty soon we'd have everybody pretty much in a Medicare-like plan where rate setting by the government is the dominant way that costs and resources are allocated.
Jim, one of the things I've heard here is that, and I think we all say this, but so Medicare, we refer to it as Medicare as insurance, and in a sense it is, it provides medical care for people. But in a sense, it's prepaid healthcare. It doesn't charge actuarially fair premiums. It's one of the reasons why it's got a $34 trillion long-term deficit. Isn't the temptation for the public plan option to do the same thing and with the same subsidies, you know, add to the deficit over time? Is that a fair observation?
I think absolutely. I mean, the political impulse, you know, if you're a politician, you're in Congress, and, you know, your constituents are coming to you and saying, you know, I'd really like the cost of my out-of-pocket costs to go down and my premiums to go down. There's a great temptation to make changes in the publicly run programs to accommodate that. And so premiums that are charged and the allocation of resources become sort of imbalanced, and that's why you end up with this huge unfunded liability in Medicare. That's exactly what happened. And it's highly, you know, totally predictable that it would happen again in another government-run plan.
Is this where the Democrats have been running into trouble with the CBO, with the Congressional Budget Office? The president proposed a committee based on, I think, the Medicare Advisory Committee. There would be a super Medicare Advisory Committee that would send a list of changes to the president and then to Congress if he approved it, and it would have to vote up or down. And he said, well, this will be a game changer. The CBO turned around and said, well, actually, there's so much politics involved, it would probably be the status quo. Maybe it would save $2 billion over 10 years, and that would be the tiniest drop in the bucket of a trillion-dollar program. Is there any way to get politics out of health care?
Well, that's such a funny observation, right? I mean, there's a quote from Peter Orszag, who's the White House budget director. He says, you know what we need to do is we need to get the politics out of government-run health care. Well, I mean, that's the whole point, really. I mean, if it is government-run health care, you can't get the politics out. And the politics drive toward a kind of system of instead of market-based allocation of resources, it's regulatory allocation of resources for political reasons. And that creates imbalances that, you know, lead to access problems, quality problems. On the surface, it looks great to the person. I get free health care, right? But when you do it that way and the government's allocating the resources, it also means, well, it might be free, but you might not be able to get it in a timely way or in a setting where you find it appropriate. So that's the basic problem with government-run health care. And I really don't see a way to take the politics out of it. In fact, it's clear to me that what the president proposed will never pass the Congress. It was a very large constitutional grab. I mean, basically tried to shift all power from the legislative to the executive branch on how to run the price-setting system, and Congress is not about to do that anyway. So, you know, where that goes is, you know, still up in the air, but I just can predict very confidently they would never pass anything like what the president proposed anyway.
Could you talk for a minute? I get this question all the time, so if you're not for this, what are you for? Are there some market forms you'd like to see? And looking at the concerns people have all the time, they talk about the uninsured. They talk about, like Elizabeth Edwards, a woman who may have breast cancer, who doesn't have insurance and faces insurance in the individual market where it would be extraordinarily expensive if she could even find it. Are there some market reforms, incremental, that you would like to see that you think could address some of the cost and access issues that we've got?
Yeah, there are. I favor, you know, like many people on the market-based side of this, I favor moving eventually toward a system where we would replace, for everybody, the current tax preference for employer-based insurance with a tax credit that would be fair to everybody. Everybody would get the same amount, and it would unleash a huge number of new cost-conscious consumers into the marketplace for insurance. It would really have a big effect in changing the dynamics. That's too big of a reform, probably, in the current context. That's one of the reasons why the public is recoiling against what the president is proposing. It's sort of too much, too fast. And so I would recommend, as a step toward a more market-based approach, a number of things. One would be we could do something like what the state of Utah is trying to do, which is build a transparent and consumer-friendly process for the employees of small businesses to get insurance through a state-facilitated process. They call it an exchange, like the Democrats are trying to do with the big bill, but it's a very deregulatory process, and it really just makes it easy for small businesses and the workers in small businesses to get health insurance that's portable. The small business's financial exposure is limited. They make a defined contribution payment, and so the workers themselves, if they pick a less expensive plan, they save money. And so it has good market-based features to it. It's also a step. It doesn't try to undo everything all at once. and they built consensus for it out in the state. I think we should be doing that kind of thing, more or less that kind of model, in every state. Then the second thing you have to do is make the premiums affordable for exactly the group you mentioned, those people who have a pre-existing condition and are in the individual market. That is not working well for a lot of people, and that's really where I think a lot of the legitimate concerns and complaints are about today's system. And there, we really have two choices. We can try to run and establish effective high-risk pools, which can be done, but it does take money. So we'd have to put more resources into building effective insurance screens to say, here are the people that would get into the high-risk pool, here are the people that should stay in the regular pool, and then fund the high-risk pool adequately so people can actually get coverage. I think the federal government has a legitimate role in trying to facilitate that, and that is a place where perhaps, you know, Republicans can make a big contribution this year. It would solve a lot of the problems if we could get that done right. And then in the public programs, Medicaid and Medicare, we ought to be gradually moving toward entitlement reforms that put the beneficiaries much more in control of how they use their entitlement. For Medicaid, I would allow the states to try to take those beneficiaries and move them into the same kind of program we just talked about, what they're trying to put together for small business employees. That would have the virtue of allowing these people who are often getting Medicaid as part of a welfare type approach, perhaps to get a health insurance that's tied, not tied to welfare, but maybe perhaps tied more to employment down the road. And finally, in the Medicare context, I think what we need to do there is really get creative with allowing the beneficiaries to drive patient-centered, organized systems of care. The bills they're working on in Congress are trying to engineer from Washington, so-called, you know, the Mayo Clinic for everybody kind of thing, and do it through the Medicare payment system. I think it would work much better and more organically if the beneficiaries themselves had more control over their entitlement and could actually use some of it to purchase care from organized systems, where the doctors and hospitals themselves got together and said, we can package our coverage differently, package what we're delivering differently, make it more convenient, more patient-focused, and do it in a cheaper way, and then have the beneficiaries sort of opt into that kind of a structure, perhaps with some savings on their premiums. So those are the kinds of things I would do on an incremental basis, and I think that the public would really respond to it.
And I know this is going to ask you to look a little bit into the crystal ball. There's been a lot of discussion and debate amongst Democrats right now between Blue Dogs, who say that they're concerned about the budget effects of public plan competition on the private insurance market. I think the Energy and Commerce Committee, Charlie Rangel, I saw on one show today, said that Representative Rangel said he was going to try and get a vote out of committee, I think it was maybe next week. But where are we going to be after the August recess? Do you think you can make any kind of prediction about what the debate's going to be like when Congress returns?
Well, I think there's just a couple of very major shoes to drop here that haven't been dropped that I think really are devastating to the bills as they're currently working on. I think there's been a lot of attention on the flaws, and that's really set the proponents back. But even so, there's still a lot of information that hasn't gotten into the public domain that will eventually. For instance, you know, on Sunday this past week, the Congressional Budget Office issued even one more piece of information that got some attention, but not nearly enough. They basically said the House bill, not only would it cost, you know, $1.5 trillion, by the way, it's not a trillion, it's about $1.5 trillion. Not only would it cost $1.5 trillion, not only would it add to the deficit for the first 10 years, it would add to the deficit every decade thereafter by huge increasing amounts. They basically said the spending will grow at 8%, and the revenue and offsets will grow at 5%. Well, you have to be a financial genius to know that that is a recipe for major fiscal dislocation. And, you know, that, when it's clear to the public that they are putting, you know, we already have a huge long-term fiscal problem, this would make it worse, you know, in spades. So that needs to become more clearly focused as part of the debate. The other thing is, the bills themselves are, the president promised everybody they're going to get if you have insurance, you're going to get a $2,500 insurance premium reduction from his plan. The fact is, these bills are going to put huge new taxes and premium hikes on all the most worthy people. They basically make the bills work by telling employers they have to pay for insurance, which will come right out of workers' pay, and the workers themselves have to take it, which will also come right out of their pay. And so, you know, when you look at the regressivity of it, it's a very punitive, regressive tax, basically on low-wage workers. So it's hard to see how that's going to be popular when people figure out, you know, on average, for an uninsured family, they're going to be paying a lot more into these bills, not less. When all that gets out into the public domain, I believe there's going to be even bigger problems for the bills when they come back in September.
Thank you, Jim, for talking with us today. Again, the article is Wrong Picture, Dangerous Fine Print, But Otherwise Obamacare Is Swell, published in National Review on the print date of August 10th, so it's available now. James, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
To listen to this podcast and other podcasts in the Innovative Ideas series, go to www.medicalprogresstoday.com and click on the podcast tab.